said embassy officials told him they would not grant the visa, quote, for political reasons. Joanna Roberts reports.
Oh, about 9.5 years.
What was it like when you first moved in?
Oh, terrible, terrible. It was a disaster. Give it all to Rose and we stopped moving when she took over, and now we finally made it.
For WBAI News, I'm Julie Cohen.
And that's some of the news for Thursday, March 29th, 1990. The news was engineered by Dred Scott Keyes. It was produced with Jenny Bourne, Julie Cohen, Tom DeKay, and Joanna Roberts. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Tara Seiler in Washington for WBAI listener-supported news.
And this is Emmanuel Goldstein. Very good evening to you. It's 11:46, and the program is The Fifth Corner. And tonight, we're going to be demonstrating once again the power of radio. And in fact, I've just demonstrated to myself the power of the record button. I hit the wrong record button. I was going to record this program, and I accidentally started erasing over one of the tapes that I was going to play, so we're going to join the tape that I was going to play in progress as I have destroyed the first minute of it, which I suppose is all right since it's only about 2 minutes long anyway. And then we'll be back with all kinds of interesting things here on Listener Supported Radio, WBAI.
Must take into account the security interests of other countries and should happen concurrently with an overall process of European cooperation. As all other changes in Europe, it must be accompanied by consolidating peace and stability in the continent. That's where a general agreement may well be likened to a consensus. Incidentally, President Gorbachev and Mr. Bush at the Malta summit had both agreed that utmost restraint and caution must be shown for all changes in Europe to develop on the basis of the Helsinki principles, including respect for the existing realities and inviolability of post-war frontiers. The position is widely shared both by the East and West. The British Prime Minister, Mrs. Margaret Thatcher, in last Thursday interview with Italian-based Corriere della Sera, raised hopes for German unification to take place with an account for the two alliances' positions and for the wishes of other countries, including the Soviet Union. But, she said, that shouldn't lead to uncertainty or instability. For the time being, the overall European process, of which German unification is a part, is making a headway. One example is the arrival in Moscow by President Havel of Czechoslovakia for talks with the Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev. The joint declaration they signed on Monday says, from now on, the two countries would cooperate on the basis of parity and mutual respect alone. An agreement was also signed on Soviet troop withdrawals from Czechoslovakia. In a surprise statement in U.S. Congress last week, Mr. Havel said, if the U.S. wanted to help Eastern Europe, it's better to do so by helping the Soviet Union. The superpower agreement on equal numbers of troops in Central Europe will certainly go to benefit the continent as a whole. Other events, however, are causing worries. Statements were reiterated during the recent visit to the United States by Chancellor Kohl of West Germany that a united Germany must be a full member of the NATO alliance, but that would signal the upsetting of the existing balance in Europe. The West German government has so far made no coherent statement about the existing post-war frontiers, which causes legitimate fears in neighboring countries. In a recent speech in Warsaw, the Polish Prime Minister, Mr. Mazowiecki, said the existing uncertainty about his country's border with Germany in the West was placing the need for continued presence of Soviet troops in Poland. Although a number of discussions will certainly follow, including the 2+4 talks between the wartime allies and two Germanies, and this year's planned 35-nation Helsinki-style conference, some aspects of German unification must be made clear now. This includes legal safeguards for the post-war frontiers and continued parity by the two alliances in Europe.
And there we end this edition of Soviet Viewpoint. It was prepared and recorded in the studios of Radio Moscow.
It sounds as if they're getting a bit tired over there. Well, that's okay. Radio Moscow and a little Viewpoint over there. and it's 10 minutes to 12 o'clock. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. The program is The Fifth Corner, and it's been a busy week. If I sound kind of out of it tonight, it's because it's been one of those weeks where you just have to do 10,000 things, and there's only so many hours in a day, and next Saturday there'll be 1 hour less. In fact, on this particular program, I'm actually doing two things at once because, well, I might as well tell you, I have a part-time job with a big organization, and you may, in fact, have heard of them. Now, a lot of us have been worrying about the census, so I don't know how many of us have actually been worrying about the census, but it's been kind of annoying to get that little form in the mail, and you have to fill it out, and I think April 1st is the deadline, and I had my form, and I looked at it, and there were some questions there I really wish they hadn't brought up, but they did anyway, and just a big moral dilemma for me. But that's something else. It's only once every 10 years. But did you know that there is another census company or corporation or organization or what have you in the United States? At least there's at least one other. It's kind of like what happened to AT&T. One day, many years ago, it was decided that there should be competing census organizations because, well, why should one organization have all the fun? So there's the North American Census Association. Now, I don't know how many people have actually heard of the North American Census Association, but that's what I've been spending my last few weeks working for. And we're a whole lot easier to get along with than this other census group that most of you have probably gotten nasty letters from. I consider them nasty letters, you know, prying into your personal affairs, such as, who are you? What do you... where you live, and that kind of thing. It just strikes me the wrong way, you know? So, we're a lot more friendly. You don't get forms from us. You don't have to answer these questions. We ask you to do it in a very simple manner. We ask you to fill out your own forms. Make up your own forms. You can do it in any way you want, and we're really only interested in two things. Your first name and your height. Those are the only two things that the North American Census Association is interested in. Really, we don't care about anything else. So, I've been tearing my hair out this last couple of weeks, 3 weeks actually, working for them, collating all these forms that we get, because they are very hard to read. And the only thing that we ask is that people use a red felt tip pen. Do not use a number 2 pencil, do not use a ballpoint pen. A red felt tip pen. We have an advanced system that can only read that particular kind of imprint. So please use that when you decide to send in your form. And you can send in your form any time. You know, you don't have to send it by the first. You can send it, you know, 2 weeks from now. You can send it a month from now. All right, just get around to it at some point. And we won't bother you with details as far as the address or, you know, what you have to say on the form or anything like that. We want your individuality to show. We want to know who you are. Not who you are, but who you are, you know? We want your personality to show in that form. That's why we ask people to write their own forms, make up their own forms, and just tell us whatever you want to tell us. We just need your first name and your height. That's really the only thing that really matters to us. Okay, so that explains kind of why I'm in a bit of a tizzy tonight. Also, it's going to explain why I have to do what I have to do now. You see, there's also an extra added thing that the North American Census Association does that those other census people, well, don't bother to do, and I kind of don't understand why that is. But there's an awful lot of Americans in other parts of the world, you know, and we're constantly trying to find out where they are and who they are. So we're going to go to Japan. Well, we're not going to Japan. We're going to call Japan and...
KDD Japan Direct.ございます.
Ah, yes. Hello. Is this Japan?
Yes.
Yes. I'm calling from the North American Census Association. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very well.
Okay, this is Mr. Goldstein from the North American Census Association. We're trying to find out how many American operators you have working over there.
All operators are Japanese.
All operators are Japanese?
Yes.
You're certain as to that fact? There are no American operators hiding around there?
No.
Okay, do you have any American postal clerks?
No.
No American postal clerks. Okay, how about American secretaries, American supervisors, anything like that?
No. No American is working at this company now.
Okay, fine. We'll just write that down. And this is the Japanese telecom, I imagine. Is that correct?
This is KDD.
KDD, that's the Japanese telephone company, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and how long have Americans not been working there for?
I'm sorry, but this is this circuit is only for Japanese-speaking people, so would you...
Oh, so if I'm to continue this conversation, I must do so in Japanese, is what you're saying.
I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I'll let you go then, and we'll go to another country. Thank you very much for your help, though.
You're welcome.
And have a nice day. All right, now that's what I have to do. I have 103 more countries after that. You know, it's living hell, folks. So while this next feature is on, I'm going to be contacting a couple more countries. And I guess it pays the rent, but it only happens once every 10 years, but it's our patriotic duty. Remember, folks, get those forms in, okay? Write them out, get them in, and just figure it out. Don't bother us with the details. All right, we're going to... What should we go to? Should we go over there? I guess we'll go clear across the room and pick up another recording. A lot of you have questions. A lot of you have too many questions, but we try to answer questions, and we try to provide you with other people that can answer questions. Now, we just heard a confused person from Moscow giving a commentary and slowing down at the end and everything like that, but this is a program designed specifically for your questions, and you can send in your questions. You can send your questions straight to Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR, and mention that you heard it on WBAI, and then we'll play the tape, and then you'll hear the tape on WBAI, and it'll be sort of like a time warp of some sort. So let's hear some questions, some answers, and then we'll get back to some more of whatever here on WBAI, New York.
Radio Moscow presents Moscow Mailbag.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Moscow Mailbag, which we'll start with a question from Carol Murphy, a 41-year-old teacher who lives in Markington, West Virginia.
What are some of the problems a Soviet teacher might have in the classroom? What kind of discipline can they resort to?
Whatever the differences between the educational systems of our two countries, some of the problems teachers encounter in class are bound to be universal, like a lack of discipline among students, absenteeism, or poor performance in class. Students may attend private or public schools, live under socialism or capitalism, but throughout the world they are known for being bored with learning. What kind of discipline can a teacher resort to? That partly depends on the age group you're dealing with. In primary school, for example, a reprimand in front of the whole class can bring the child in line. Or, if he or she is particularly naughty, you might try talking with their parents, who can provide you with a clue as to how they manage their own kids. Personal contacts with each student are valuable, giving a teacher more of a chance to win the child over to her side. Regrettably, these days, teachers who can't control the class seem to think they can solve their problems by losing their temper. An understandable reaction, but hardly a justifiable one. A teacher's lot with constant overtime work and not too generous wages is now a poignant one. The school reform that was started over 4 years ago and meant to make school a livelier place both for the students and for the teachers, after some feeble attempts at change, ground to a halt. Reasons for that are being examined like never before, and one solution many people agree upon is that strengthening discipline and improving performance can be achieved through increased motivation of the students in their studies. But in the absence of up-to-date school curricula on many subjects, and with the inertia of school management, the accomplishment of that task may take some fancy footwork. Our next question comes from Paul O'Toole of Nanaimo, British Columbia, Canada, who writes the following.
How does the tax system work in the Soviet Union?
On the face of it, the tax system in this country is sparing to private people and very demanding on industrial enterprises. Most of the money drawn from taxes into the state budget comes from taxes on profits these enterprises make, whereas the money individuals pay amounts to only 8% of the sum. In the U.S., for example, the situation is quite the reverse, with the bulk of taxes coming out of the pockets of private citizens. The present tax system in the Soviet Union was drawn up some 50 years ago and has not been amended since to any substantial degree. At that time, the difference between minimum and maximum wages and salaries was not big, and so all salaries and wages were taxed a fixed 13% of the sum if it exceeded 100 rubles, the then average earning. Besides, childless couples in the Soviet Union and single men over 18 pay a special tax, rather odd, for not having children. The tax introduced by the government to stimulate population growth has received a great deal of scathing criticism, but is still there. We also have taxes on privately owned cars and home pets, but the sums are insignificant. Authors' fees are taxed, be it a publication of a book or a musical composition. All told, taxes amount to some 15 to 18% of a person's earnings. That's on the average, because for the poor, the percentage, although similar, means a substantial chunk of their incomes taken away from them. The tax system is now reviewed towards greater differentiation and flexibility and is meant to allow people in the lower income group to live above the subsistence level by fixing the minimum level of wages and salaries, which will not be taxed, and at the same time introducing progressive taxation for the well-to-do. The draft law on taxes has already been put to a nationwide discussion and is soon to be considered by the session of the country's Supreme Soviet.
Tom Martins of Raymond Altar, Canada asks, how long is the longest train ride in Russia? From where to where does it go? How long does it take? Do people take it as a vacation? And one more question on the same subject comes from Mr. Powell of Kitimat, British Columbia, Canada. Can tourists complete trips in the Trans-Siberian Railway? I'd like to visit the USSR by rail.
The longest train ride in this country is one that goes from Moscow all the way to Vladivostok, a city in the far, far east of the country, a big port on the Soviet-Chinese border. The rail crosses 9 time zones and takes about 6 days to complete. Now, to take such a trip as a vacation, you have to be absolutely crazy about trains. Just imagine 6 days and nights in the same compartment with occasional raids into the restaurant or the nearest carriage. Pretty taxing. The scenery can perhaps make up for a lot, but then remember that there's another 6 days to go back. As for the Trans-Siberian Railway, the ancient rail started late last century, connecting Moscow with the city of Khabarovsk, which is up north from Vladivostok. Yes, the trains carry not only Soviet, but foreign passengers as well. And, Mr. Powell, if you contact the Intourist office in Canada, that's the leading foreign travel bureau in this country, you'll get the tickets all right, and I wish you a very nice trip to Siberia. Has a pretty nasty sound, doesn't it? Okay, here's a letter from Lars Lipson of Long Island City, New York, who says the following.
Perhaps you could clarify to me my confusion about the cardinal principle of socialism, that is, from each according to his ability to each according to his worth. Through the years of Soviet rule, the Soviet Union prided itself there was no unemployment. Everybody who sought employment was guaranteed a job for life. This was in contradiction to the capitalist rule, which is those willing to work may have an opportunity to be employed and thus earn possibly a living depending on his or her bargaining power. Then, wasn't a guarantee of permanent work in a socialist society a critical violation of Marxist principles whereby laggards were able to draw pay and thus undercut production and cripple the economy that should have been vibrant and productive to abundantly supply the needs of the Soviet people? Does the Soviet Union now realize its violation of the vital Marxist principle?
Well, the answer is yes and no. Yes, because the erroneous economic policy, which brought the country to the edges of an abyss, wrote on the principles of paying money to whoever would be willing to take up the job. Firing a lazy worker became a bit of a problem, though it in no way meant that we had no unemployment. It's been creeping up on us for some time now, a logical result of over-centralized control and poor planning. Today, the army of unemployed numbers thousands and thousands of people. But as I've said, the answer is also no, because the task of introducing elements of the market system to make the economy more efficient proved particularly ungrateful and cumbersome. And while many people are prepared to give according to their ability, very few indeed can face up to the reality of being remunerated according to their true worth. Hence, firing laggards is still as hard as ever before, and the old motto of a job guarantee to everyone is winning new supporters by the thousand. Economists clash over ways to combine the guarantee of a job, one of the cornerstones of socialism, with the need to introduce competition and put up production. Meanwhile, economic growth rates last year hit another record low. Old formulas don't work, while new ones have not yet been developed. For our next question, here is a letter from Mr. Frank Rodeo, Jr. of Hamilton, New Jersey.
What is the Young Communist League, he asks?
It is, in the definition any Westerner would be ready to give you, a politicized youth organization rigidly controlled by the Communist Party. An estimate, largely true, but not the whole truth. It is indeed a youth organization whose prime goal, from the time of its foundation, has been the upbringing of the young people in the spirit of communism and the ideals of the Socialist Revolution of 1917. In 1919, when the Young Communist League was formed, it rivaled with the remaining pre-revolutionary youth organizations like Boy Scouts, but very soon it was the only such organization, a gigantic conglomerate uniting by now some 35 million people. The membership shrunk drastically over the last few years when the Young Communist League was revealed for what it was, a corrupt power structure for the few who ruled, mostly senselessly, an army of rank-and-file members only to help their own careers. The picture for all the gloom is in fact not so bad, as over the decades of its existence, the Young Communist League, or Komsomol as it is known in this country, has done a great deal to help many big-scale construction projects in this country, grappled with the problem of juvenile delinquency, was the chief manager and overseer of many summer camps for smaller kids, and is still involved in a handful of useful activities. It is also going through a period of doubt and wild dissent among its members, who often find a new freedom in a myriad of the so-called informal or independent organization, streaming the youth according to their interests in music, the arts, sports, etc. I don't think Komsomol is going to disappear from the scene despite some gloomy forecasts to this, and even the talk of a change of a name. It has a very well-developed hierarchy and organizational structure, and some very enthusiastic people in its ranks, who are striving to see it re-geared toward a loftier cause. And in many ways, it still retains the political weight and the authority, as well as some financial muscle. Here's another question from Mr. Frank Rodeo.
How many seats and houses does the USSR Supreme Soviet have?
The current Supreme Soviet is formed according to a new system, passed over a year ago. General elections were held last spring to form the Congress of People's Deputies, the highest body of power. It was only the first stage toward electing the Supreme Soviet, a rough equivalent of the American Congress or British Parliament. The Supreme Soviet was elected from among the 2,250-strong Congress to become the country's working parliament. It has 542 members, equally divided between the two chambers, or houses, the House of the Union and the House of Nationalities. The former, as the name suggests, rules on matters relating to the entire country, whereas the House of Nationalities considers issues pertaining to the life of each particular republic. Now that we've been through two sessions of the Supreme Soviet and two Congresses of People's Deputies, it is becoming increasingly clear that their functions sometimes overlap. Moreover, the Congress of People's Deputies is a very cumbersome and costly structure that can, with time, prove insupportable. The two coexist side by side, but in the ongoing reform of political structures in this country, that may not be the final solution.
Ms. Esty DeNoor of Madison, Wisconsin writes, a Soviet couple we met recently claimed that Lenin started the concentration camps for dissidents that later were shown as Stalin's camps. They cited the Solovki Islands as a camp that was established under Lenin. Is that true? Can you tell me the history and present situation of these islands?
Yes, the first camps, or colonies for political prisoners, prisoners of conscience, as well as criminals, were set up in 1923. That's the time when Vladimir Lenin was still alive, though he was very ill and was practically removed from power. The Solovki Islands, a string of islands in the White Sea in the northwest of the country, were indeed one of the first sites for such a colony, where the first prisoners arrived in the summer of 1923, including Russian aristocrats, former government officials who ruled the country in Tsarist Russia, members of different political parties and the clergy, as well as an assortment of criminals and, strange as it sounds, some of the officials from the Soviet secret police, who were no longer considered reliable or were convicted of on trumped-up charges. The colony existed till 1939, in place of an old monastery, and saw tens of thousands of prisoners. The exact number of all the inmates remains unclear to this day. The rules regulating the life inside the colony were austere. Prisoners served time in total isolation, completely cut off from the outside world, worked 12-hour shifts, and were required to maintain army discipline. In a drive to reform the convicts, give vent to their creative talents, and develop literary skills, a literary magazine was published that included verses, poems, and novels written by the prisoners. Dozens of editions of the magazine came out, but the idea was abandoned several years later. The Solovki Islands now house a museum where an exhibition opened late last year featuring the history of the labor camp to give people the idea of what a terrible place it was. Someday, who knows, it may once again be handed back to the church, the way it used to be centuries ago. And there let me end this edition of Moscow Mailbag. It was prepared by Irina Solovtsova of our staff.
Oh, that was a bit of fun, wasn't it? That was folks over at Radio Moscow sent that over to us. And we actually got one from Long Island City there. That might have been a BAI listener that sent that that particular... oh, busy. It's all busy. Everything's busy. Anyone care to guess how many busy signals we have here? Tempo change. Well, enough of that anyway. The program is The Fifth Corner. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. We're down to one busy signal. And, actually, that's a reorder. It's 13 minutes after 12 o'clock. And I'm happy because while Radio Moscow was playing, I was continuing my census work. And I found three Americans at a tire factory in Napal. That's right, three of them. We were unsuccessful in Japan. We couldn't find anybody at KDD, the Japanese phone company, that was American. But my job is to search and seek out Americans in foreign places that don't want to be searched and sought out. But I found Bob, who is 5'11", Josephine, who is 5'4", and Theodore, 6'3". And they're over there in Napal, and now I have them on the forum here. I've got the red felt tip pen. And again, let me remind folks that you do have the right to choose your census organization. In other words, you don't have to send to that other census organization. You can send to our census organization, which is the North American Census Association. It's just one of those ways of being, I guess, fair about things, you know, divestiture of the Census Bureau or what have you. A lot of people don't know about it, and we're here to educate and confuse. What's the opposite of confuse? Someone help me here. Inform. Thank you. Thank you very much. Who is that anyway? Well, it's almost a quarter after 12, and I've got to get back to work, counting people, finding people all over the place. In fact, my next stop is, maybe you can come along for this one. I've been calling, I called about 14 countries while Radio Moscow was playing, and only found those three in Nepal, but I do get a commission on that. I get a commission on all the Americans I find. I'm going to try the phone company over in England. They're always very pleasant.
Greetings from London.
Yes, hi. This is England, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, hi. My name is Mr. Goldstein. I'm calling from the North American Census Association.
I've got time to tell a rabbit.
I'm sorry? He said something about a rabbit? Well, we're going to keep this line open. We hung up. Wow. What do you mean by that? Oh, see, that's the kind of response I keep getting. Everywhere I call, people don't want to be counted. But I'll tell you, folks, it's for your own good. So fill out that form. Make up your own form. Remember, we don't ask you to to fill out a particular form. Just make it up yourself. We just want your first name and your height. Red felt tip pen, please. And just send it to North American Census Association. Drop it in the mailbox. No address necessary. It'll get to us. Okay. Enough public service announcements here. Time for us to get to something a bit more relevant.
The ones who brought you Image 73 bring you something different.
Moribund music of the 70s. Cali Award winner Dick Vaughan takes you all the way back to a long-forgotten period to explore the lost realms of a slow and indiscriminate culture, sauntering through the last phases of the American Dream era. Brought to you in authentic 1970s stereophonic format, you will relive or experience for the first time the past as it actually happens through music, commercials, news reports, contests, phone calls, and most importantly, Dick Vaughan's moribund music of the 70s.
Nebulous. Oblique.
All individual logo elements have been isolated from the larger cuts of the winning score to provide additional short IDs and promo pieces. There are acapellas, dozens and dozens of instrumental thematic elements, an entire catalog of scored production music in every possible tempo, intensity, and texture.
Listen.
Execute a perfect cut. Yeah.
They're all using
short jingles.
Nothing wrong with short jingles, for God's sake. They make for a better format and flow than
we agree.
Well, they are.
There are a lot of good reasons for short IDs.
Well, they are.
But there's no reason they should make you sound the same as everybody else.
Same as everybody else.
What they are is marvelous pirates and great presenters of other people's ideas.
They're the
Why, yes, in spite of the more ridiculous excesses.
Now that sounds different.
That's different. That's different.
We're talking about selling records. We're not talking about, you know, bringing in people for nostalgia purposes here.
Day in and day out to see what it was that was popular.
And a lot of money to the record companies in 1992. That's what we've been talking about. Who is going to be, have the staying power? Who will be around 7 years from now?
Number one.
Complicated words to be a superstar in 1992.
But I think that, yes, it's a very big business. Listen.
Oh, I've got permanently breast hang-ups over here.
What you doing, old-timer?
Singing, can't you tell?
Well, you're only interested in gold.
That's why I'm singing, going after a gold record.
Try Nuco margarine.
How's it go?
Nuco's good as gold. for very little silver.
Will never sell.
Sure will. Nuco tastes like butter and costs much less than the other fancy margarines.
Nice tune, but you can't dance to that.
Fragmentation.
Icon.
Fragmentation.
Incongruous. They don't understand the fragmentation.
Record alone is $12 billion a year worldwide. In America, it's $5 billion of that.
Another perfect cut.
Standardization. Hi, this is Dave. I can't get to the phone right now. So if you leave your name and number at the sound of the tone, I'll chop off your phone.
You may start your message now.
Means it's big business. Means it's big business.
Thank you for calling. Bye.
Doesn't include the merchandising.
No one is going to
music publishing and songwriting.
Please leave a message at the tone.
Like a deal with Coca-Cola for $5, $10, or $12 million to tie in with a particular soft drink manufacturer.
I like a piece of meat.
It depends upon at what point in their career. Certainly in the beginning of their career, it could be 8% of the retail selling price, 10%. 12, it depends if their producer is included. A big superstar, you should figure, is getting about 20% of the retail.
Your message has exceeded the maximum time. The message already entered has been recorded.
I would think so, and maybe some kickers as well and some other bonuses, but they also get guarantees in advance. They might get a $5 million advance against their royalties, which means it's recouped against each unit they sell. But if they don't, then they have to return that. That's the beginning of what's called the depersonalization of the art. But that's also the beginning of the money-making process, because all of this is a business. It's making music, but it's also making money.
$10 bills.
Oh, my God.
$50 bills. $100 bills.
Everybody's lips today.
You can cut your meat bill in half or eliminate it entirely.
Is it budget, 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 and budget? Is it budget, 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 and budget? Well, Budget. Budget. Well, I suppose little wonder with a high cost of eating.
And then he stopped.
Another
perfect cut.
Oh my gosh, what a coincidence. This happens to be in style. Well, the most important things I have in my life are succeeding in making my goals. And my goals are I'd like to get a swimming scholarship to a college. And I'd like to become a lawyer when I grow up, you know. And I'd like to go to college, probably at UCLA, because I hear they have nice weather, good-looking guys, and oh, what a party place. And, you know, it's not too bad, I'm a school leader. And, let's see, I'd like to have sixth year at high school, you know, I'd like to make a lot of friends, have a nice time with them. And I'd like to get a few boyfriends and have a nice time with them. And, let's see, what else? I'd like to go to a lot of parties at this time. When I grow up, I want to get a white rabbit convertible and live in a nice place and have a dog named Gidget who's never lazy. And I'd like to work in a nice building downtown with a bunch of good-looking guys working there. I can have a nice time and, you know, take my friends out to lunch and buy my parents nice things and be a happy person. And the most important thing in my life is to go to heaven when I die.
That was exciting because it was so foreign to the adults. Oh, it was, I mean, they were so turned off to that music, including myself.
We've been listening to you, and you've been telling us that you had identity problems.
When I first played it, I said, is this for real?
Yeah, music.
Is this for real?
That's what do you expect from Dropbox?
You told us that your competitor's jingles sound like yours. You've been telling us that you need to increase flow out of stop sets. The jingle shouldn't hang up the flow at the most crucial time. The time that you need to get from a commercial break back into music. You've been telling us that you need a new way of handling
your
Hey,
under directory.
Please hold. You're calling.
800 directory. Hello.
New music. That maybe I should listen more closely.
Hello.
And I did, and I learned to dance to it.
Help you.
And then it was over. I was sucked in.
Mark, what are you listening?
Hello.
And you've been telling us that the jingles need to be shorter.
One radio station. One vital channel of communication is the silver voice that can speak for it all. Now, listen.
Mark, you just claimed a $100 bill.
Oh, my God.
$100, Mark.
I don't believe it.
$100.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have a heart attack. Oh, listen to me.
$100 bill.
Fantastic.
You like that?
That is superb.
The modulators.
Cut five.
WCFL.
Now, let's add timpani to accent call letters.
WCFL.
Now, let's add the orchestra.
WCFL.
Increase identity with vehicles that will increase flow. That's the idea. IDs that hit hard and hit running.
Short day.
Shotgun intros and accents on each letter of your call. IDs to increase flow out of stop sets. We call the series the Propellants.
New sugar-free Dr. Pepper. It tastes as good as regular Dr. Pepper.
With the Propellant insert cuts, your personalities are tied to your call letters. Notice how the orchestra accents the call letters to drive home your logo.
Oh, you thought you'd see it now, didn't you?
How often should jingles be played?
Cut to 11.
Let's face facts. A top 40 station's average listening span is lucky to be only 11 minutes.
Pathetic.
You must identify yourself within your audience listening span. You also need enough musical identification to avoid predictability.
Now, something different. Cut 8.
Flow activation. That means keeping the energy flow constant between elements.
Whether or not those elements complement one another.
The trajectory of beacon
series also includes up to 9 DJ shouts.
Jane West.
Plus over 30 special electronic components for use in contests, production, and as personal identifiers for each DJ.
Dick Vaughan's Moribund Music of the 70s. Please come along with Dick as he officially offers you this last chance excursion into yesteryear. For soon the path will be overgrown and lost forever.
from January 1st, 1970 to December 31st, 1979. We've got your moribund music.
I still say Dick Vaughan is a prostitute.
Powerful identification and increased flow. All tempos are covered, fast, moderate, and slow.
And your monologue handles with the propellant insert cut.
This is Joe Simon for Insert Cut.
W, solid gold, BFL, today and tomorrow only.
W, all hits music, BFL.
The insert cuts also enable you to handle a cold start transition smoothly.
9-3-4-0-0.
Tom Whiten with the honeycomb. This is what ads.
Today and tomorrow only. Top-selling stereo LP sale price at just $266. Eight-track tapes now only $444. Featuring a fantastic assortment of bestsellers from Billboard Magazine's Top 100, including LPs and tapes by The Jackson 5, The Carpenters, Elton John, Neil Young, Cat Stevens, Black Sabbath, James Taylor, and Ike and Tina Turner.
Four specially selected favorites are coming up in just minutes. So keep listening.
I'm Jenny Miller with news headlines for December 1978. In the news this month, U.S. space probes strike Venus on target. The average price of regular gasoline soars to 76.7 cents per gallon. A killer twister rocks northwestern Louisiana to the tune of $100 million. As Leif Garrett dances his way into the top 10 for the very last time.
The power, ideas in imagery.
W-I-N-D.
Brass. Screams. Percussion. Power is ideas in station imagery. And it won't take even a second longer on the air, because the logo statement and reinforcement is woven throughout the instrumental background, giving you an exciting way to accentuate your message. You can hear the power. Let your listeners hear it. It's called the power because it's solid reinforcement of your program.
And another.
It's so annoying. I used to just shut the radio right off.
Better transition than half the time. The jingle never gets in the way of the flow.
There's no way we're going to keep the cameras out of here.
I want to still go down.
Music, 1978.
I want to leave. Dick Vaughan was a prostitute.
Jesus Christ.
Dick Vaughan? I said Dick Vaughan.
Number one, if you would like to understand the words to this music, what you have to do is put on a pair of headphones, turn the volume at a very low level, and you can hear the words very clearly. You can't hear them through the speakers. You have to use the headphones.
On the other side of this record.
On the other side of this record. On the other side of this record.
Another perfect cut. Okay, okay. I'm happy.
Yeah.
And
it sounds like crap, doesn't it?
And now, 200 cuts later, another cut.
They've gone at it for about half an hour now.
Perfect cut. Now's the time. Now's the time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. Now's the time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. Now's the time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. What? Now's the time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. What? Now's the time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. What? Now's the time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. What a switch. Now's the time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. What a switch. Now's the time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. What a switch. Now's the time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. What a switch. Now's the time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. What a now's the time. Now's the time. What a got time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. What a time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of money. What a switch. Now's the time. You've got 48 hours to save a lot of time. What a switch. Now's the time. Now's the time. What a switch. What a switch. What a switch.
Remember, nothing happens until someone buys something. Nothing happens until someone buys something.
Now, you might be telling yourself, the project sounds great.
What can I say? It's just beautiful.
The project in its package form is available for your use immediately with your own chosen title for the album, as well as the entire inside cover surface for your use. Take two high-quality stereo LPs, put them in a full-cover jacket, add a beautiful sexy gal on front, and candid photos of the KQ jocks inside.
You don't need words like hard-hitting.
And you've got a bombshell.
Perfect, God.
In the retail stores, the album will sell for $4.88, and you will receive an additional 25 cents per album above the royalty rate set for mail order. The stores will receive the album on a 90-day consignment basis with 100% return guarantee. They will be billed $3.73 per album at the end of the consignment period for records sold, and this is the highest quality pressing in the industry. For complete cut-by-cut demo tapes and lyric sheets and information about other services, please return the enclosed reply card.
More abundant music of the 70s.
I'm going to go reproduce. Stand by.
That Pink Boy.
Nickelback. Polymorphous Perverse.
That was really good.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What about the record?
Ah, they'll get it.
I want to go to Peter's house. I have to go pee.
I like that.
I don't want to go down.
I want to take a nap. I want to take a nap.
I want to go.
I'm so tired.
I'm happy.
I'm sad.
I want to go home. I have to go pee. I like that.
I'm happy.
I don't want to go.
I'm sad.
I want to pee.
I want to take a nap.
I want to take a nap. Are you sad?
I don't want to go to Peter's house. I don't want to go to school. I don't want to talk on the phone.
But what you need is funky fresh lyrics falling down on time. Your enemy popping it, dropping dimes. Coming out rocking, tomahawk slam. And still getting fly with the mic in my hand. I'm cold cooling out, laying in the shade. Steel is bugging cause they're gonna get sprayed. Say intimidator, your star face. What's going on? How's what taking place? I don't wear gold, but I rock duck it. Cause I have the money overflowing out of buckets. You want crazy dollars, I make people holler. You stick them up stupid and I'm snatching by the collars. Cause
I'm so tired.
Peter's house.
the ship. I make them walk the plank. Riding around the world, 160 million francs. Not like the kind that you put on the grill. Cause I only do it like that when I'm on the chill hill. I'm the...
Hey, don't want me. Go down.
I don't want to go to Peter's house.
Like that. I am Turtle Pete.
Happy.
Are you happy?
Are you sad?
I want to pee. I want to pee.
The important thing to remember at this stage is that nearly all pirates get busted in the end. It just didn't seem possible for a station to ever become active and achieve a large audience. Often, the FCC caught on quickly. The station slipped up and gave out vital information, or the operators became too sure of themselves to believe they could get busted. But a few professionally styled stations began popping up in the 75-meter amateur band in 1977 that defied this norm. Each station was believed to be connected with the others, or maybe they were all run by one organization, because all were very similar in program and technical quality. All of these pirates used apparently high power, had clean audio, played music and humor programs, spoofed shortwave radio broadcasting and listening, gave out fake locations, usually with fake addresses, used obscenities, and operated in the middle of 75 meters.
I don't want to go to Peter's house.
Since few other pirates had high power and clean audio at that time, it seems likely that at least a couple of the stations worked together. The perplexing question is, why would anyone want to broadcast in the middle of a ham band? It is definitely the worst place on shortwave to broadcast for interference reasons, and because the amateurs quickly complain to the FCC whenever a transmitter is operated illegally. WBLO became the first and most widely heard of the stations on 75 meters, with broadcast initiating in 1977. WGLI, Great Lakes Radio, claimed the location from the shores of Lake Superior and played pop music briefly in the... ...79. Less than 6 months after Radio Clandestine was mentioned in Friendex by the listener, another station, possibly the original, jumped onto 75 meters with the same call sign and format. It quit after several broadcasts. WBLO returned in early 1980 after a few months of silence.
I don't want to watch a movie.
The voice of Syncom and Radio Confusion.
I want to play.
Two other stations that began about the same time as the second, or return of, Radio Clandestine also received high acclaim. Radio Confusion, the Crazy World Radio Network, operated much like a legal shortwave broadcaster, except less frequently. The station operated for about 1 hour every month on frequencies between 7,400 and 14,000 kilohertz. Radio Confusion was the first American pirate to actively operate in the higher frequency ranges.
I'm sad.
I'm happy.
I want to watch a movie.
I want to go.
I want to go, too. I'm sick of that. Okay. Away with you. I was reading something here. I don't know if you were able to realize that, but that was a book I was reading just now. It's called Pirate Radio Stations, Tuning in to Underground Broadcasts. And we've got about 12 minutes left. Let me just say, anybody wants to call in, we'll try to squeeze you in the 12 minutes we have. We'll have to make kind of cramped arrangements to do that, but we can do it. And let me tell you what you've been listening to. Besides the book, it's written by Andrew R. Yoder, and it's published by Tab Books. This just came out. This just came out, copyright 1990, and Tab Books. It has sections about political pirates since 1983, pirate radio from 1925 to 1976, from 1976 to 1982, inside pirate radio, Euro pirates, offshore pirates, holiday pirates, political pirates, pirate utilities, how to verify pilots, and all kinds of things like that. We also heard from Negative Land, a bit of pirate radio there, I guess you would say. We heard The Perfect Cut, Canned Music, Rudy Poops, Good as Gold, Piece of Meat, White Rabbit and a Dog Named Gidget, 11 minutes, 48 hours. All right, folks, I warned you, it's going to be cramped, so let's see what we can do.
Hi. Hi, I'm Emmanuel Goldstein. I've heard a lot of your shows here on WBAI, and you seem to be a pretty technically oriented person. I was wondering if you knew anything about hamburgers.
Well, does the other caller want to respond to that?
I was wondering if there was an index in that book. I was wondering if WMDT was mentioned.
Ah, WMDT.
Came on, right about where you guys are, up here in Orange County, New York.
I don't see a I see a WMMO, WMMR, and WMM.
That was great. He came on crystal clear right in the middle of FM, and would come on for like 4 or 5 hours every now and then.
Uh-huh.
And he would, you know, right about where BAI is, right below it. There's kind of a dead zone here. You know, I guess we're between two other lobes or something, right in the middle of the band. And he had the best rock and roll and the clearest transmitter I've ever heard.
And he was right smack in the middle of New York City?
Oh, no, it's Middletown, New York. It's about 40, 50 miles up from the city. That's where I'm listening to you from.
Ah, well, I guess he's not transmitting today, eh?
He had about a 25-mile radius, whatever power that puts him at, I don't know. But he was crystal clear and he'd come on. Use a lot of fake names. Like one day he'd be WMDT Middletown, New York, very professional. You thought it was a new station. That was his gimmick. He would like go to these fake commercials where they would be invisible.
I would say he probably killed half the people that listened to him had no idea he was bootleg.
Well, that's.
It was. I mean, I have a tape of him. I have a 45-minute thing. I found him on one day and I got the tape, and then he went off the air. Right, and I only got about 45 minutes. But you know. Really jamming, playing, you know, full album sides with you know, Dolby. I mean, my Dolby light used to come on, you know?
Uh-huh. The last pirate, I guess, that most people remember is Radio New York International, the one that operated off the boat in Long Island.
Oh, yeah, I know of that. But it's great. I just wondered, I really have to run. It's late.
Okay, it is late. We all have to run. Thanks for calling. Is there another caller on the line? Anyone on the line?
Yeah, I was asking about hamburgers.
What about hamburgers?
Like, if you'd like to get one after the show is over.
Well...
Because all I had to eat today was, like, cheesecake and a little egg with, like, cream cheese in it on an onion roll.
Well, I don't know if you're trying to get people sick over the radio. That's, the power of radio means that you can do things like that. You can make people physically ill as well as mentally upset.
Oh, yeah, like, I hear my radio talking to me every day, you know, and... You know, rubs my mind and, you know, just makes fun of me all day long. Like, for instance, yesterday I was meant to sleep. And, you know, this computer just came into my mind and gave me a round of applause from, like, 50,000 people. You know, one computer can do that to you. It can give you a round of applause from 50,000 people.
It's amazing the things you can learn. Sir, have you ever been active in pirate radio?
No, I haven't, but I hope there will be plenty.
I think with people like you around, there will be plenty, of course.
Oh, there'll be me around. There'll also be this Big Daddy computer, and there'll also be other TV computers and plastics, and hopefully, you know, kids will become knowledgeable at the age of 6 and learn their stuff, you know, if the farm helped out. Of course, you know, I'm playing the game with TV on one hand and keeping my parents happy on the other.
279-3400. Give us a call. Rescue us here.
Can I ask you?
We want to hear other people's opinions. We want to hear them interrelate and things like that, you know?
To think.
I'm sorry?
You know what it's like to think.
Well, that's a...
Okay, I don't think.
How could I say no, you know?
I don't think. Just voices in a brain, okay? Haven't thought since 1976. First time.
Uh-huh. I see. Would you like to explain this to somebody else?
Okay,
I'm sorry?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. We're having some trouble communicating here, obviously.
Oh, okay. Because, you know, this all started 1976, Earth time. I was designated by this computer to pull the plug on it, okay? I was working in the fashion center, the garment district. This computer just came into my mind, you know, told me to hang up my business phone. You know, it takes over your subconscious. And, you know, sent me to 11 mental hospitals, 3 jails, got me a divorce from my wife... has beaten my pants in for over 12 years in the mind, and I am the computer. Okay, and whatever I've been through is the world's worst, and you don't know that, and I am the computer. And, you know, that's how it's going to be until I'm helped out.
Go ahead.
And already a few senators know about this in writing. Senator Gore, Senator Bradley, and, you know, mail has been stolen from me in the past, in important documents.
You keep quiet.
And no. I have the return receipts.
You keep quiet. Let's hear what the new caller has to say.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay.
Where are you calling from?
Jamaica, Queens, New York.
Oh, I've heard of it.
Oh, okay.
How you doing out there?
All right. I was just wondering, like, what kind of station are you? I mean, like, do you play rap or, I mean...
Yes.
Well, we play all kinds of things. We play what's on our minds. We talk a lot.
Oh, because, see, I'm into rock. I'm into rap. You know, I like Public Enemy. I like Twisted Sisters. I like everybody.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot to be learned from everybody, and we try to get to it all.
Yeah.
But there's a lot to be said as well, you know.
Sounds good. What's your name, by the way?
Emmanuel Goldstein.
Emmanuel Goldstein. Okay.
Yeah, and I come this way every 2 weeks at about this time for... an hour and 15 minutes.
And I dialed this number for a 718 area code. I got your answer machine?
Well, I don't think you got my answering machine, but there is a 279 exchange in the 718 area code, and I pity the person that has 279-3400 and 718.
Office of Emmanuel Goldstein.
Uh-huh. We got two more. We got three more people. Let's see what they all have to say.
Good afternoon. I've been listening to WBI for quite some time. I don't know if you have any information, being that you're a political activist station, regarding the bombing at the courtroom of Al Sharpton.
No, I'm sorry. We don't have any information on that. The newsroom is closed.
Can I ask you my question?
Go ahead.
Okay. Do you know anything about shortwave radios? I've heard you talk about it a little bit, so I thought maybe if anybody would know, could you tell me if you could get WBAI over a shortwave radio in another state?
No, you can't get WBAI in a shortwave radio, but it would be a good idea if, and I'm not suggesting this, but if a pirate radio station were to start up somewhere and they had a lack of programming, just putting the microphone next to a radio that was spewing out WBAI would certainly prove interesting for the rest of the country and the rest of the world.
So how could they do that?
Well, you know, I don't know exactly how to start a pirate radio station, but I do know that there are quite a few, especially in the shortwave bands. There's one out on Long Island called Radio Free Long Island, and or the voice of Free Long Island, or something like that. And they broadcast to a good part of North America, and they're only about 100 watts.
I couldn't do it with a because they have a transmitter. You mean?
Uh huh. Well, why? It's not all that expensive. It just takes a little bit of ingenuity. But you're less likely to get hassled by federal authorities on the shortwave band because so few Americans listen to the shortwave band in the first place.
But now, wait a minute. I want to get this straight because if I found someone with a transmitter in let's say we're in Colorado or New Mexico, they could pick up on WBAI, but I can't on a... I would need a transmitter, in other words.
Well... somebody would have to rebroadcast our signal on a shortwave pirate radio station. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Who else is on the line?
I am.
How
yeah,
you doing?
I built the computer that's bothering the other guy.
Oh, you did? Tell us about it, please.
It's an extremely small computer.
I'm going to go listen to the radio.
Well, it's an extremely small person, I think.
Goodbye.
Who else is here?
Yeah, I am.
And I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Where can you get these transmitters at an Army surplus store?
Oh, I don't know. I think
I heard that you could.
I think you have to build them, but yeah, probably the Army surplus because they certainly send out a lot of shortwave messages, don't they?
Mm-hmm. And also on the higher frequencies with some modifications. So if anyone's interested, they might want to look into that.
Uh huh.
Picking up an old Army surplus transmitter and some of these are even portable. Put it in the back of a van and they'll never catch you.
Well, That's something to think about.
Drive around like Brooklyn and Queens and...
A mobile station.
Right.
My question is, how do bootleggers usually get caught?
Who usually get caught?
Bootleggers.
You mean pirate radio people?
Yeah.
Usually because they don't do what this other person is suggesting. They stay in one place and they just allow themselves to be surrounded and found. And most people that broadcast pirate radio stations... do it on the FM band, and FM broadcasters get very upset by that.
Commercial.
Uh-huh.
Broadcasters. Sure, you guys don't.
Of course not. We're a real radio station.
Hey, the guy with the computers, is he still on?
No, he sort of fell away.
He had tried medicating himself, possibly.
Yeah. It's an idea. Thanks for calling, folks. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you again in 2 weeks, maybe.
Okay.
All right. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. The program has been The Fifth Corner. Stay tuned for Bob Fass coming in. And I hope you learned something tonight. I know I sure did. Not the kind of thing you can wrap up in words, but the kind of thing you can just sort of absorb through your skin.